Our fourth and final oral argument of the day is DACA number 25-1719, In Re Niznik. Mr. Bright, whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the Court. My name is Pat Bright. I represent the appellant, Dr. Gerald Niznik. Dr. Niznik is a towering figure in the dental implants business. He's been in the business for more than 40 years. He has more than 30 patents. He's had four successful companies. And he has been one of the key figures in the United States, at least, in making the use of dental implants.
I'm sorry, Mr. Bright, could you stop for a second? Could you start the clock, please? Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honor. I was saying that Dr. Niznik is a towering figure in the field. He has more than 30 patents. He's had four successful companies, several of which have gone on since he sold them to other people, to be very successful, and most importantly, to make the dental implant a standard solution for people who are partially or wholly edentulous. Now, this patent application, which is covers the idea of an implant which has a body which is externally threaded, and the neck, which is smooth, but has gauge lines on it. These gauge lines are placed precisely so that the dental professional can use them to place the implant correctly. But if you know anything about the dental implants, about the use of them, they require the dental professional to drill into the jawbone of a patient, or into the upper jaw, or lower jaw, and to place the implant, which is, with the externally threaded, is placed as if it were a screw placed in wood or metal. And
counsel,
then
the
implant is covered over.
Counsel.
Question.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
What is your best argument that you'd like to describe to us or argue to us for you to win in this case? Because we are familiar with the background. We have your briefs and we've reviewed them. So why don't you just get to your best argument?
I'm sorry to say I could not understand what you were saying, Your Honor. Could you say it one more time, please? I don't know if it was my hearing but could you just state the question, please?
I want you to just argue the case. You don't need to give us any more background. We have read the briefs.
Very well.
Tell me your best argument and go to it right now.
Very well. I submit to this panel that there are two legal issues presented, claim interpretation and obviousness. These are both legal questions, not factual questions. And my reply brief explains what terms of the claims need to be interpreted in order to see whether this is unobvious or not.
That's pretty late for raising a claim construction position.
Well, I had it in the opening brief, too, but I mentioned it only because
Did you have it at the patent office? Did you tell them what claim terms you thought needed to be construed and what constructions they should adopt?
Well, the terms that are most important are the cylindrical externally smooth neck portion, the top of body portion.
Let's just answer Judge Stark's question, though. Like, let's focus on his question, which was, did you tell the board what term should be construed?
Yes. Oh, yes. It's in my brief.
No, your briefing to the board, to the patent board. Where in your brief to the patent board did you say, for example, externally smooth has a very specific meaning in the context of this application, and here it is. Blank. And then same thing with, any other claim limitation.
Well, before the board, there was no argument as to what the term smooth means. Smooth simply means a surface which is not disturbed, but has an even surface from one end to the other, from one side to the other.
So is it safe to say that you did not ask the board to construe any claim terms?
I don't remember the board briefing because by the time we got to appeal, the board's briefing was essentially mooted by the briefing here, I would suggest to you. But nonetheless, I can't pinpoint the exact pages because I don't have that in front of me today. I have
You have your appendix?
I beg your pardon?
Did you bring the appendix?
I didn't bring my appendix with me today.
Well, let's assume for the moment I've read what parts of the briefing below are contained in the joint appendix. And I don't see anywhere in your briefing to the patent board that certain claim terms such as externally smooth or depth gauge lines needed some particular kind of construction in order to do the application of the prior art to the claims.
If I recall correctly, the board didn't take issue with that. The board took issue with the idea of whether or not the features at the top of the implant shown in the two-sided references could be treated as if they were gauge lines, even though they weren't called gauge lines.
That's right. And so much of the board's responsibility is a function of the arguments that are presented to the board. And as I understand your briefing to the patent board, one of your main arguments was, well, these prior art references don't teach these limitations because these references don't say smooth or they don't say depth gauge lines. And then the board responded, well, that's not a requirement under the law that the prior art reference actually say the exact same words that are contained in the claim, as long as those illustrations and written descriptions describe essentially the same thing, then that's good enough.
Sure. If the references described the features we claimed in words other than our claim, then there would be a difference without a distinction. I beg your pardon. But the reality is that the implants shown in the prior art are intended, like most implants, to be placed flush with the top of the bone, crest of bone. And the reason is you want the implant to adhere to bone, and you want the bone to grow around it. If you place the most implants, this has been the practice for 40 years, anywhere but in the bone, you have no assurance that the implant will osseointegrate with the bone. And if it doesn't, the placement is a failure.
Do you want to turn to your second argument? You told us your first argument, which was about claim construction. Do you want to turn to your second argument that you thought was an error?
I'm so sorry, Your Honor. I just cannot make out what you were saying to me.
Okay.
I don't know whether my hearing has gone bad on me or something.
So you said that you had two different arguments that you were going to argue to us. First, you said you'd argue about claim construction, and we've talked about that as a group. Now I want to know if you had a second argument that you wanted to argue to us in terms of that now.
Yes, I do. And that is, thank you, Your Honor, and that is that the references, there's the, both disclose that at the coronal end of the implants disclose, there aren't gauge lines, but rather there's roughening or slots or other kinds of features that are intended to integrate with bone. That means that the top of these implants shown in the prior art are to be placed flush with the top of the bone so that the features at the coronal end will integrate with the bone. This is antithetical to the idea of having the coronal end protrude into the gum tissue.
At least at one place in Carmen, Carmen states that the coronal region 5 engages the cortical bone and sometimes also the gums, quote unquote. So therefore, at a minimum, it is contemplating situations where the coronal region is not just in contact with the cortical bone, cortical tissue, but it's also the gums itself, i.e., it's above the crest of the bone.
What Carmen says is, to be more precise, Your Honor, is that...
Well, I just quoted you what Carmen says.
Carmen uses the word engage. She says that the top of the implant may engage the gum tissue. And that's no surprise because just above where the cortex of the bone is begins the gum tissue. But engaging is not the same as protruding into the gum tissue. If it protrudes into the gum tissue, you will get inflammation and irritation, and you will get a failed implant. So the mere fact that it says engages is simply to say because the top of the bone is contiguous with the bottom of the gum tissue, the top of the implant may engage, it may touch, but that doesn't mean it protrudes. It doesn't say protrudes at all, because you wouldn't roughen the top of the implant and then have it protrude into the gum tissue because you would get inflammation of the gum tissue and failure of the implant. So the reasoning, it isn't
well,
just...
What if the board made a fact-finding to the contrary? I mean, I understand your interpretation of what Carmen is trying to say here, but let's assume for the fact the board came to a different conclusion as to the meaning of this sentence in Carmen. And that's a fact-finding now about what this reference discloses that this court is not really in a position to overturn generally because we give a very deferential standard review to the administrative board's fact findings.
I understand that argument, Your Honor. It's just a mistake. The fact of the matter is the top of these implants shown in the reference in Carmen are configured such that they should not protrude into the gum tissue, lest you cause infection. That's indisputable. Go ahead.
It may be indisputable that they should not, and that the patient would be unhappy, and it would be a failed implant. But what makes it improper to discern from that possibility the obviousness of the limitation at issue in your client's patent?
Because it reflects a complete misunderstanding of what happens when you have a metal object protruding in the gum tissue during the healing period. That's a clearly erroneous finding of fact, if it's a finding at all. All the board did was say, I read this sentence to say it engages, and that's enough. But that doesn't mean it protrudes at all. It doesn't say it protrudes, and it isn't configured to protrude. It isn't structured to protrude into gum tissue, and if it did protrude into gum tissue, you would unfailingly, in every single case, you would get unsatisfactory inflammation of the gum tissue. I have implants in my mouth. Believe me, if anything protruded into the gum tissue, you'd be in misery.
Do you have any expert declaration to the contrary of what the board...
Well, Dr. Nesnik provided his declaration. It's quoted in my reply brief. It explains why he configured it this way. It's a counterintuitive kind of thing.
I guess what I'm wondering is...
An expert? No.
No. But did Dr. Nisnik's declaration speak to this particular sentence in Carmen when Carmen says that the coronal region engages the cortical bone and sometimes also the gums?
He doesn't address it. There's no need to address it because all it says is that the top of the implant may touch the bottom of the gum tissue under some circumstances. But that's not a goal. That's not a placement instruction. The placement instruction, if you read the reference, Your Honor, the placement instruction in that reference is that the top of the implant shall be coincident with the bone tissue and not go any higher. If it does, you will inflame the gum tissue. And anybody who knows the first thing about this implant business knows that's the case. The reference doesn't say protrude. It says touches. If I put my finger against my palm, it doesn't protrude into my palm. It simply touches it. It engages it. That's all it means.
Right, you're into your rebuttal time. Would you like to save it?
I'm done for now. Yes, sir.
Okay, very good.
May it please the Court. Substantial evidence supports the Board's findings that claims 9 through 12 and 16 through 19 would have been obvious to one of ordinary skill at the art at the time of the application. Specifically, the Carmen reference discloses all of the claimed limitations except the expressly disclosed length of the neck portion, which is claimed as up to 3 millimeters. For that limitation, as the board explained, a skilled artisan would have been motivated to use the neck portion length of the Saka reference, which is disclosed at 2 to 3 millimeters, because that would provide the implant with initial stabilization after implantation to allow osteointegration to be complete. The challenges...
Do you think the patent board did an implicit claim construction here when it did an application of Carmen to the claim elements and finding that, yes, Carmen teaches all of these claim elements, including an externally smooth neck portion and depth gauge lines in the neck portion?
I don't know that I would say there was an express construction done by the board, but they certainly did address what scope would be limited by the claims. And I think with respect to the smooth limitation, one of the things that the board looked at was the application itself makes a distinction between a roughed body portion and a smooth neck. And in comparing the figures, the prior art and the patent. There's nothing to distinguish one from the other, and that goes with the gauge lines as well. Is if you look at the Carmen reference, actually describes them as micro slits that can be added into the neck region that look very indistinguishable from the same ridges that are in the application figure one.
Well, there's ridges in the figure one of the application?
Yes, Your Honor. If you look at, I believe it is APPX 128, the lines drawn on the top of the neck region.
128?
Appendix 128, yes, Your Honor. I'm looking at it at the back of the blue brief.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's not
I don't have that page.
Okay. So
it's those lines.
Less than clear to me that I would call those ridges.
That's fair, Your Honor. There's not a depth indicated there.
At most, there is a score line.
Fair.
Right? And so I guess the question is, when you turn back to this Carmen reference, I mean, they look like, I don't even know what to call them. It looks like a thread.
In figure one of Carmen, it looks more thread-like, but if you look towards figure seven of Carmen on appendix 500, there's more of an indentation look to it. It gets a little closer. But I do get Your Honor's point, and I think the board addressed this by saying the claim limitation is a cylindrically smooth neck. The neck itself is smooth, and the analogy I'd like to make is we can have a road that is smooth and flat. If I put a speed bump on it, that doesn't change the smooth characteristic of the road. And if I cut a little ditch or put a little indentation in it, the road remains smooth despite a new element being added to it. And that's how the board addressed this limitation.
And is that an implicit claim construction or not?
They certainly were addressing the scope. I don't think, I can't see anything in their opinion that said this term means X, but I think what they did do is provide some boundaries to resolve the dispute that was presented before them, which, as I think was correctly brought up before, and I believe I heard my colleague say, the terms themselves were not at issue in front of the board or even in rehearing. The first time the claim construction argument has been made by my colleague was in the blue brief.
And didn't that argument only get made in the facts section? I don't think I saw it in the actual argument section.
That's correct, Your Honor. But we still addressed it as if it did appear in the argument section, but you're right that would be an inappropriate place for that to appear. With respect to specifically the teachings of Carmen, I would also, in addition to the part that Judge Chen pointed out on Appendix 475, I would also like to direct the court's attention to Appendix 493, which in this section we actually have an express discussion that the implant would allow good attachments of the gums to the implant, therefore preventing bone loss. So we're again talking about the gums touching the implants. And down on line 18, we have to enhance the attachment to soft tissue, which again would be the gums above the jawline.
What was the line for the other part?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, Your Honor. That was lines 9 and 10, this narrow region.
Is there a phone again?
Mr. Bryant, is there a way you could just turn off the phone?
I cannot seem to do so, Your Honor, but I did stop that one. Sorry about that. This is a brand new phone, and I don't know how to operate the phone.
Well, let's just hope we don't have a third.
Proceed.
Lines 9 and 10, Your Honor.
If you were Dr. Nisnik's attorney, and you wanted to amend these claims to distinguish Carmen, how would you redraft the claim? Because at least when you go figure to figure, they do feel a little different.
D- In fairness, Your Honor, I had not thought about this question ahead of time on how I would amend the claims to exclude the prior art. I do think there is, if you wanted the distinction of how the implant is to be used, perhaps we shouldn't be talking about an apparatus claim, and maybe that's one of the first things I would consult my client with is maybe a method claim is better, the implantation. If you're looking at the inventive thing is the way that it's being implanted, perhaps the claims should be more directed to that. But as far as how I would amend the apparatus, quite frankly, Your Honor, I don't know that I'm prepared to do that here at this podium.
So where are the depth gauge lines in these common figures? It's a little squirrely to try to settle down and point to one specific thing as being the depth gauge line.
That's correct. And Your Honor pointed to it in Figure 1 of Carmen. It is the ridges at the top of the neck portion that both the examiner and the board pointed to as being able to satisfy the limitation that the depth gauge lines have in the claim.
Well, those words that you just said, I don't know where to look in the Carmen figures.
In the Carmen figures?
In the Carmen figure.
It would be Figure 1, the area labeled 5 at the top neck portion.
I know that's the neck portion. Now there's a lot of busyness going on inside that neck portion that is allegedly smooth. So where, but putting that to the side, where are the actual gauge lines?
They are the lines that you see at the top of the neck portion is what the examiner
That's the top surface.
And the threadings at the top of the neck portion is, I believe, what the examiner and the board pointed to, yes.
For our record purposes, can you use numbers or something just so that if I were to listen to this again, it'd be nice to know what these lines are?
It's the call-out 5 in Figure 1.
On Appendix Page 499.
Appendix Page 499.
Assuming that illustrated in the neck portion 5, the coronal region 5 of Figure 1 of Carmen, is showing us microslots. Okay. Is it the microslots themselves that are the gauge lines? Or is it, say, I don't know, the demarcation line between an individual microslot and its neighboring adjacent ring above the or below the microslot? Is it that line that is that demarcation line, the gauge line? I couldn't quite make it out from your red brief or the board decision which thing am I supposed to look at.
I believe it is Carmen's disclosure of the microslots. And turning to the text as opposed to the figures of Carmen, at Appendix 467, line 20, we read, the coronal region can have micro slots. These slots can be circular along the same horizontal plane or be along several vertical heights. So it's setting up the idea that we can put micro slots along the neck.
So I guess you're saying in the agency's view, these micro slots in Carmen are essentially the same as these gauge lines, when the gauge lines, as disclosed in the patent application, are score lines. And score lines, if you think about it really broadly, is kind of like a mini groove inside the surface of the neck illustrated. And these are just bigger grooves, but nevertheless still micro slots.
That is my understanding to you.
Nobody quite said it like that.
No,
but I guess that's really what you're saying the agency thinks.
That's the way I had interpreted the examiner and the board's handling of this part of the reference, yes, Your Honor.
The other side devoted a lot of his opening argument to the idea that there's just no earthly way that you would have any part of the coronal region of Carmen's device resting against any gums. You want to respond to that?
Yes, Your Honor. I think in addition to the portion of Carmen that Judge Chen pointed to at Appendix 475, which expressly says that it may engage the gum as well. There's also the teachings at APPX 493, starting with line 5, talks about in these embodiments, the coronal supragingival part, which means above the gum line. And then down at line 9, we have the narrow region allows good attachment of the gums to the implant, therefore prevents bone loss. Again, we're talking about it being above the crest line if it's engaging the gums.
Anything to say about protrudes versus engaged?
I'm not sure that anything that this court needs to resolve would turn on that distinction. I think in order for something to engage, it has to be proximate to or around it. And the only way you're going to have one of these implants touching the gum is if the implant is protruding out of the bone in which it's been implanted to. Unless there's any other questions.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Your Honor raised a question about claim drafting. What could be said in the claim to make the line between the old and the new clearer? But our claim already does. It says that the neck portion projects at a desired height above the crest of bone. And it is on that smooth projection that the gauge lines go. And if you look at our claim 17, we have claim 9 as an independent claim. Then we have 17, which is has much more detail about the number of lines, the spacing of the lines, and all that. None of that language can be read upon either of the references because these slots and threads and bumps on the coronal section of the implants depicted in the two references are never used as a gauge line. They are used to engage bone, and they would therefore not project into the gum tissue unless the dental professional placed the implant incorrectly. In which event, if it was put in your mouth, you would be having a heck of a bad few weeks with gum infection. Believe me, you would. Now, I wanted to call attention, my brief says this, my reply brief quotes the part of Carmen which says that it's on page 3, beginning at line 28. The narrow coronal region and or the coronal inversed tapered region of the implant is best to be placed below the bone level. Below the bone level.
Wait.
And the bone is touching and covering this region.
Wait.
I beg your pardon.
Hold on. You said page 3 of your gray brief?
Page 3 is in Carmen itself.
Oh, okay.
And it's in my reply brief at page 16. I quoted it in page 16 in my reply.
Oh, right. You don't have the appendix. That's right. Okay. So
I quote it because it makes it crystal clear that he doesn't want to have the top of the implant project into the gum tissue, lest you develop an infection within 2 or 3 weeks. And so our claim, what the patent office did and what the board went along with was saying, well, bumps and lines could be used to kind of gauge where things are. But those aren't gauge lines. And the features that the two references are with board used and the primary before them, these features are intended to be engaged bone. That's why they're bumpy, because they wanted to get the bone to grow around it. This is antithetical to placement in the gum. And with that, I thank the board for your patience, or I should say the panel. You've had a long morning. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The case is submitted, and that concludes today's arguments.